And we're going to talk about COVID-19 vaccinations, and this is a live Q&A that you can get involved with, and I'll tell you how to do that in a second. But I'm joined online by Dr. Mayada Abu Afan, who's Head of Adult and Older People's Public Health for Dudley Council, Dr. Ruth Edwards, who's the Chair of Dudley Clinical Commissioning Group, Dr. Mo Mandiratta, and Hitesh Patel, who is a pharmacist. Good evening to you all.
Good evening.
Thank you so much for having me. No, not at all. You're very welcome. Now, if you're following us on Facebook, then you can, we're live there now. And the idea is that you can post your questions on our Facebook page, and I will try and get to as many of those as I can. You can also send them to me via our website here in the studio, blackcountryradio.co.uk. So two mediums there, and I'll try and get through as many as I can. First of all, Dr. Mayada, why should we have a vaccine?
That's a good question, really. We should have the vaccine because the vaccine is effective and it is safe. We've been seeing a real reduction in rates in the whole UK and in Dudley. For example, our rates in Dudley have reduced by 16% compared to the last week, so week on week. And the rates amongst over 60 have reduced by 62%. So the vaccine is safe. It is effective. It protects us from having severe COVID, from needing to go to the hospital, needing ICU, and dying from COVID.
Sure.
Dr.
Ruth, now, what impact has the pandemic had on the Clinical Commissioning Group and how you've managed to get these vaccines rolled out, you know, jolly quickly? I mean, it must have been a tremendous sort of feat, really. But it seems, as Dr. Mayada has said, it clearly works. But how has this impacted on what you've been doing, and how have you gone about getting this, getting these vaccines out?
So the news that we would have to put a vaccine program out, we received in December. Mm-hmm. And by the end of December, we had to be prepared to roll out the vaccine program at great speed with our most vulnerable group of patients, who are the over 80s and our care home patients, and also all our health and social care workers. So we had a number of sites set up. We initially started with a hub in the hospital for care home for the social staff and the healthcare staff, and also our GP practices joined together. We have locality groups called PCNs, and so at great speed they had to start working together and set up a vaccine centre in each of our areas. So we've got six areas in Dudley where we've got GP centres. There's Briley Hill, King Swinford, Hales Owen, Stourbridge, Sedgley, and the middle of Dudley. So all of those areas got vaccine programmes set up very quickly, and we contacted our patients. And we've also got the Black Country Living Museum as a larger hub in our area as well. So we're very fortunate that we were able to get all of these centres up and running so quickly. And we've taken on extra staff to act as care coordinators. We've been really well supported by volunteer staff. We've got the military services joining us now as well. It's and St John's Ambulance. It's been a really successful campaign at getting lots of people to support us, and you know, particularly our practices have had to change the way they work. We've had to change the way we work anyway with the pandemic, and a lot of our work has been done remotely, but we're certainly opening up now and getting more patients seen, but also simultaneously running this vaccine program as well.
Dr. Mo, what type of vaccines are we getting in the Dudley Borough, in the Dudley area?
There's three vaccines that are licensed by our MHRA, our Medicines Health Regulatory Authority for the United Kingdom, and that's the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, the Oxford-AstraZeneca vaccine, and the Moderna vaccine. In terms of the scale, the majority of the work we're doing locally is with the Pfizer and the AstraZeneca vaccine. So that's both in our mass vaccination sites. So that's been the Black Country Living Museum. We've got Tipton's Sports Academy, and as Dr. Edwards mentioned, across all of our practices as well. We've also got community pharmacies coming on board with the vaccination program as well. So practically, it's both of those vaccines we're using. There isn't per se a choice as to what vaccine people can get. So we're, you know, whatever's available, we are distributing amongst our communities following the Joint Committee for Vaccinations and Immunizations guidance as we work through the cohorts and offering those vaccines out. But obviously, there are particular cohorts, particular patient populations who, for in particular instances, one vaccine may be more preferable, where we will have those conversations. But generally, we're just saying, look, whatever's available, come and have it, because both vaccines, as Dr. Mayard has said, both vaccines are incredibly safe, incredibly effective. And alongside the hard work that everyone's put in following the lockdown restrictions, they are showing the effectiveness in the fact that we can now slowly but carefully step out of lockdown.
Now, I've had a question already from Rebecca C. Rebecca, thank you very much for your question. She says, a question for the doctors. Can we choose which vaccine that we would prefer to have?
So I don't mind taking that one. There isn't a choice. It's because, the supply, as a lot of people have heard through April, our supply has been a little bit less than it was previously. But we have equally been focusing on our second doses in April as we're approaching 3 months from when, as Dr. Edwards said, the big sort of upsurge in vaccinations was January time. We're now in May. So that 12-week period where people need their second vaccination is now. It's largely a supply thing. Essentially, in our practices, we get up to about a week's notice for when we're getting vaccinations. So when we get them, we'll book our clinics. And we just want to get everybody vaccinated as quickly and as efficiently as possible. So there isn't a choice. However, there are particular, as I said, patient cohorts for whom one particular vaccine may be more advisable than the other. And in those cases, we will advise those patients that they should attend one particular clinic over another.
So when Dr. Mayard, when we go for our vaccine and we receive our vaccine, whether it's the first or second dose, what's actually happening in our body once that liquid goes around our bloodstream?
Vaccines, they all work with the same concept, which is putting inside the body either part of a virus or a part of its envelope. So the body will produce antibodies against that virus. And in the COVID, it's around the spikes around the virus. All vaccines work, all COVID vaccine works on the same concept. So when we get the actual vaccine, the actual virus or infection, the body is ready and has all its defense mechanisms against the virus. So it will prevent it from adhering to the lung, because the virus now causes fibrosis and damage to the lung and damage to other systems and damage to the red blood cells and causes thrombosis and clots. Mm-hmm. So, but the vaccine will, or the body will have its weapons to paralyze the virus and preventing it from producing and reproducing inside the body, and ultimately it will die. So people who are vaccinated, they are either not going to get the infection altogether, or if they get the infection, they are going to get it very mild. So very unlikely they will need hospital admission or oxygen therapy or even die from the vaccine, as Dr. Mo said.
Why then do we feel, well, some people feel unwell for a period of 24 or 48 hours afterwards. Some people don't have any effect at all. Now, I had my vaccine in the middle of March, and I had the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, which I'll come on to that in a bit. And by about 12 hours after having it, I felt really cold and shivery, and I was in bed because it was sort of, middle of the night. And I found myself enveloped in my duvet, rather in my subconscious, I think. I think my body realized that it was cold and needed to keep warm. And I was desperate for a hot drink, so I got up and had one. And then I felt just a little bit of out of sorts on the following day. But by the Wednesday, so that's, 2 days afterwards, I was as right as ninepence. And if you saw me, you would have no idea that, I'd been a little bit off colour. So what happened in my body in that 48 hours?
It's your body like fighting the the vaccine or fighting the weakened part of the virus and developing its guard against it. And the immune reaction differs from a person to another. Majority of people will have just soreness around the vaccination, the injection site. Other people will have, like, as you said, muscle pain or feeling unwell for 24 hours. I had AstraZeneca and I felt unwell for 24 hours, but I just had paracetamol and next day I was fine. So nothing to worry about. Just take paracetamol, drink lots of water and rehydrate yourself and you will be fine within 24 hours.
That's right. And that was the advice I was given. And I followed that to the letter coincidentally. And, you know, I was fine afterwards. Hitesh Patel, you're a pharmacist. You obviously will have your own pharmacy. How have people responded to the vaccine when they've come in for their jabs? And, you know, what's it been like for you trying to administer all this?
So I probably have a slightly different role. My role is very much based around supporting general practice with the vaccination program. So I actually we have a team of pharmacists who have been supporting the vaccination program in the PCN sites that Dr. Edwards mentioned, supporting colleagues around vaccination advice and actually sort of producing the vaccines for each of the PCN sites, doing some of the work around vaccines in that capacity. My colleagues in community pharmacy have also been, you know, involved in the process in terms of advising patients about coming forward for vaccination. They've also been doing a lot of telephone work around supporting people post-vaccination with the sort of advice that Mayada just gave around paracetamol, rest, fluids, to make sure people don't sort of get or recognise the symptoms post-vaccination as being quite normal. And we have a number of pharmacies now also setting up vaccination centres within the locality to support general practice in delivering vaccinations alongside the mass vaccination centre. So huge opportunities in terms of people getting vaccinated within communities and the flexibility that offers in terms of opening hours of service to complement the services we're getting in general practice at the moment as well.
Okay, that's lovely. Thank you. Liz from Hales Owen, thank you for your email. She says, I'm so grateful we're leading the way with vaccinations. We're doing so much better proportionally than anywhere else. Should we see this as a way to bring a status quo that we can build on and we'll start having vaccinations annually like the flu jab? Is that the long-term plan? Who fancies answering that one for me, please? Dr. Mo, the floor is yours.
I can take that one. I mean, the vaccines minister quite recently said that there is a real likelihood that we will need boosters. Obviously, that hasn't been defined yet, and we're still learning about COVID. So, you know, with the millions that have been vaccinated, there's more and more research and information coming out as to how effective they are. What we don't know is how long the vaccine lasts for yet. And obviously, we have this concern over the variants, which obviously our public health colleagues, our local authorities are working hard to sort of keep a track of. But obviously, for that reason, potentially later this year, we may well need boosters. As to which cohorts of the population will need that, when that will be, I think we'll find out in time. But certainly the suggestions at the moment from what the vaccines minister has said is there is a likelihood need for a booster towards the autumn or winter this year.
Now, I'm due my second vaccine on the middle of next month. The side effects that I experienced on my first vaccine, are they going to be the same on the second, or are they likely to be worse or less intense? Anybody?
Shall I come in there?
Yes, please.
The potential side effects are the same. So the commonest is pain in the injection site, aches and pains generally, fatigue, fever. There's no specific evidence as to whether you get more side effects in the first one or the second one. Anecdotally, it seems that people perhaps react more to one than the other. Mm-hmm. I was absolutely fine with my first one, but on the second one, I was a bit like you in that I had to take to bed for 12 hours and have paracetamol and fluid. It's very unusual for myself to react in that sort of way. But, you know, people are having mild reactions. But, you know, when we're doing the second vaccinations and talking to people about their side effects, it's really only a small minority of people that are experiencing side effects. So my hope for you, Clive, is because you had a reaction with your first one, hopefully it won't be quite so bad the second.
Well, but I saw it as a good thing, really, because yeah. I knew that I'd done some reading up on it, as you might imagine, in this job, and I found out that, you know, it's my body starting to fight what it perceives to be as an infection. It's not an infection, obviously, but it thinks it is, so it's been duped into doing that to making the antibodies. Am I right in saying that? Because I took the precautions that Dr. Mayada has said, and as I said, 48 hours later, I was absolutely fine.
I think so. I think it's an indication that your body is having an immune response. But I wouldn't want people that don't get any side effects to think they're not having an immune response, because clearly this immunisation will be effective whether you get side effects or not. So some people will and some won't, but it is your body having a sort of systematic reaction when you do get the side effects. Okay. And they do seem to be a bit more common than with the flu jab.
Yeah, when I have the flu jab, my side effects are almost non-existent, really. So, you know, I'd done some reading, so I knew what may happen, and, you know, I followed the advice and everything was fine. I've had an email from Nicholas in Briley Hill. Nicholas, thank you for your email. He says, a slightly different line here, but I've heard on TV that we're in a situation where our GPs are under pressure and numbers aren't as high as they should be with our overall primary care landscape being confusing. Could one of the panel give us an idea of how we as patients can help? When should we go to a pharmacist or dial 111, for example? I think people want to, but they don't necessarily understand the boundaries of roles. So just go to A&E when there's no clinical need to do so. Good question. Thank you, Nicholas. I'll throw that open to anybody that fancies taking that one, please.
It is a very good question, and we've certainly worked very differently over the last 12 months with a lot of our work being done remotely. But general practice is very much open, and where possible, we would like in normal working hours for general practice to be the first port of call rather than attending A&E or the urgent treatment centres. You know, it's always best to come to your GP first, who've got your records, who know more about you. Across Studley, we've introduced a new system called Footfall. So a lot of the practices, not all of them, but a lot of them, you can actually make online contact now as well, which means you can put a question to your GP practice. They might be able to respond online, or you might get a phone call back. But your caller is absolutely correct. The whole of the NHS is under extreme demand, and it is difficult for us to keep up with it. But we are open, and we're doing our best to respond to all levels of help needed. And sometimes that will need to flow over into our urgent treatment centres and A&E, but I would encourage general practice to be the first port of call, unless it's something fairly minor symptoms, which our local pharmacists are very able to deal with. So, you know, if you're able to contact your local pharmacy, it's absolutely fine to start with them. And quite often in primary care, you might get signposted to different pathways to get help. So we might signpost you to the pharmacy or the physiotherapist or other ways of getting help.
Okay, that's lovely.
Could I just add to that, Clive, just around the pharmacy side of things, is exactly what Ruth was saying, that a number of our pathways have now started to include minor ailment services, which direct people directly into pharmacy, but also things like emergency supplies of medicines. There's no need to go to A&E for those sorts of things. Those things can be dealt with in a community pharmacy, so we can take the pressure off our acute services. But pharmacy's playing an important role in that. And I think COVID has really sort of got us in a position where actually we're working much more collaboratively within primary care, linking in with secondary care when we need to.
Lovely.
If I could follow up on that as well, just one last point. So with 111, that's always obviously available out of hours, in hours if needed, but 111 do now have access to emergency department appointments as well. So, you know, again, we don't really want, unless it's an emergency, in which case, of course, you should attend an emergency department. But if you're not sure, if you contact 111, if it is a problem that may need an emergency department input, they can book you a slot into A&E rather than you just turning up, because obviously our hospital colleagues are working very hard. Us in primary care, you know, it's the same staff who are doing the vaccinations or also trying to do day-to-day primary care. So as everyone's mentioned, the pressure is really high, but there's a lot of advice available, whether that's through GPs, through pharmacies, through 111, or obviously, you know, emergency department in an emergency.
During the Feast of Ramadan, some people have heard things where people have sort of suspended having a vaccine because obviously you fast during Ramadan. But surely people should still have the vaccine if their appointment is due during Ramadan.
I can take that, yes. Having the vaccine, it's an intramuscular injection or injection inside the muscle, so it shouldn't affect your fasting. And this is the view of the UK Islamic Association and the view of all religious parties in Islam. People might be worried because if they felt unwell a day or two after the vaccine, they needed to break the fast and take paracetamol. And in this case, we encourage people to book their vaccine appointment after Ramadan. We are in day 23 now, so only 7 days to go until the end of Ramadan. But I encourage people to not to see the vaccine as a way that's going to break their fast.
I've seen a lot of things, as we all have in the wider media, with concerns around the use of the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine. There are so many conspiracy theories out there about vaccines in general, but there have been some concerns about alleged blood clotting and other things. But, you know, from what I've seen on the news, the figures from that are minute compared with the volume of vaccines around the world that have been administered. Should we have any concerns?
I was going to say I agree with you, Clive. The numbers are so tiny that it doesn't really constitute a significant concern. But I do think we have to take it seriously. There have been some episodes of blood clots, but blood clots are relatively common episodes that happen anyway. So that's why we're not sure whether there is a correlation. But there's been some measures put in place. It's unfortunate that some of the European countries suspended completely because that impacted on our vaccine program as well. But I think we are correct to carry on. But when we get to the under 30s group, there will be a change in plan there in that we will not be using Oxford AstraZeneca as the first line for our under 30 cohort because of this possible link with blood clots. But if the numbers are absolutely tiny. Hitesh, did you want to add more?
Yeah, just to put some concept on the numbers, it's something like 4 in a million, so 1 in every 250,000 vaccines. So it's the numbers are very, very small. With all new medicines that are licensed and authorised for use, we do spend a lot of time looking at their profiles, and there's a yellow card system that we use to report any adverse effects of medicines. So pharmacovigilance on medicines in this way is normal and actually a good thing that we are actually looking at the detail behind it. The clots that we're talking about are very rare types of clots. And actually, when we look at the sort of numbers we're looking at in terms of the four per million, it's such small numbers. I think that in most of the population, what we're saying actually is that vaccination is more important than COVID itself will cause clots and could cause more illness. But for most of the population, it'll be beneficial to have the vaccine. We have put some things in place in all our PCN sites to sort of mitigate against risk. So we've done some sort of searches to identify patients even before they come for vaccination. And even when they come for vaccination, there's some screening questions that we'll be doing to make sure people who have any sort of concerns around clotting are effectively counselled.
Okay, that's lovely. Thank you. For those of you who've just joined me, you're listening to Drive Time on Black Country Radio. I'm doing a live Q&A special with Dr. Mayada Abu Avafan, who's head of Adults and Older People's Public Health for Dudley Council, Dr. Ruth Edwards, who's the chair of Dudley Clinical Commissioning Group, Dr. Mo Mandirata, and Hitesh Patel, who is a pharmacy expert. Let's go back to the questions. Mike in Hasbury. Mike, thank you for your email. If you want a question that you'd like me to put to my guests, then you'll have to do this via email. We've tried to get our live stream working, but that seems to not be wanting to play this evening. So if you've got a question, you need to post it online via our website at blackcountryradio.co.uk. And that's exactly what Mike has done. And he says, I think sometimes we can get mixed messages from the media and watching the Downing Street briefings. Can you just confirm for us the numbers and importantly deaths appear to be dropping? If we're sensible, he goes on to say, and precautionary, should we be optimistic for the next few months and normality returning? Who would like that one?
I don't mind taking that one.
Thank you, Dr. Mel.
I would definitely be optimistic. I think, you know, obviously the last 12, 15 months we've tried to come out of lockdown, and I think the big difference we have now is the vaccination programme. That is really our way out, and as we've mentioned previously, you know, we're world leading almost with the vaccination programme. So I think absolutely we should be hopeful. I think we're not out the woods yet. I think that's equally important to say. You know, we've had 50 million people vaccinated, 35 million with the first dose, 15 million with the second dose, so they've now got full protection. So we're getting there, but there is a fair proportion of people who haven't been vaccinated yet. You know, if you haven't been vaccinated, yes, the younger age groups are much less likely to get severe COVID, but they can still get it and pass it on. Now, overall coverage has been fantastic. I think nationally it's over 95% of over 50s have had the vaccination. However, that still leaves 5% of people in the vulnerable group who would still be at risk of COVID. So I think it is important that we do things very gradually. I think, you know, we don't want to jump too quickly. So it's still important we follow the guidelines, the hands, face, space, fresh air guidance, follow the restrictions that are in place of only meeting outdoors. But absolutely, I can't wait for things to get back to normal. And I think we're definitely, for the first time in a long time, feel like we're heading in that direction. So I would love everyone to be as hopeful as I am. But yeah, we need to be cautious at the same time. Cautious optimism.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's a good way of putting it.
Can I just add?
Of course.
I'd like to remind people that the full protection from the vaccine is we achieve that or realize the full protection after 3 weeks from the second dose. So please, not after the first dose you think you've been protected and you ignore the guidance of the masks and hand washing, space and fresh air. So we need to be vigilant and we need to still play our part so we are all out of this together.
I'm glad you've made that point, actually, because having had just one vaccine, I am still very, very cautious personally, and I'm continuing to follow those rules for obvious reasons. So that's an important point to make. I had an email from James in Kinver. James, thank you very much for your email. He says, I don't want to make this political because it's not, but I can't help thinking that with Brexit and the ability to make our own decisions around medicines has accelerated our vaccination programme and put us in a place that was unimaginable from even 6 months ago. When we compare it with the horrific scenes that we see in India, it's almost impossible to believe that we're looking to drop social distancing and get people back together. And he says, thank you, NHS. He makes a fair point. But, you know, I mean, if our figures are showing that we are, you know, on that downward slope, but you've all said quite rightly, you know, there's no room for complacency. Why should we not start that path back to normality?
So I think we are starting the path back to normality. I think a lot of credit needs to be given to our research companies who have been able to get this vaccination program up and running so quickly. You know, there was a lot of trials that were done simultaneously to enable us to get the program out so quickly. And I think, yeah, we've been in a fortunate position in the UK to really promote it. And it is so sad to see what is going on in other parts of the world, particularly India. And our thoughts go out to people there. And, you know, actually the NHS is putting support around Indian communities as well to try to offer some support with what we've learnt. I think as we try and get back to normal, we follow what Dr. Mo and Dr. Mayada have said, but the travel is of concern to me. I think we do need to be very cautious about how much travelling takes place this summer. And I think if we can try and holiday in the UK, we're more likely to not bring new variants into the country and we can keep ourselves more protected.
Lovely. Okay.
And can I just add also on travel? Just it is important we follow the government guidance when we come back from abroad, especially from amber countries. And the government website updates the country list. So we need to really follow the self-isolation. It means self-isolation, no visitors, no going out, and the councils or local government would be able to support in terms of bringing food to you through volunteering programs. But it's really, really important we spend those 10 days self-isolating at home.
I want to come on to pregnancy now, because people have had concerns about having vaccines during pregnancy. Surely that's safe for people to do, isn't it?
Shall I take that?
Please.
So, yeah, the advice in pregnancy changed recently, Clive. So we used to say that in pregnancy we were going to vaccinate those women who were either at risk of getting COVID infection or had an underlying health problem, which would put them at greater risk of COVID. The guidance now is very much saying that those women who are pregnant will be called for vaccination in their age cohorts as we reach those age cohorts. Unless there's a concern around some sort of underlying health problem, in which case they'll be caught sooner than that. We have some really good data coming from America, where they've given over 90,000 doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine to suggest it is safe in pregnancy. In fact, the AstraZeneca vaccine is probably safe in pregnancy as well. We just haven't got enough information on it as yet to say that that is the case. So at the moment, pregnant women will be offered COVID vaccination in the age cohort as they arrive. But what we will be doing is offering them the Pfizer vaccine in our localities.
Super. Now, I'm mindful of the time. We've got around 15 or 17 minutes left. I want to get as many questions in as I can. Ruth from Hales Owen says, what confuses me is that when we get to D-Day and we've vaccinated all we can, surely it'll be difficult to start an annual programme. Some people will be 6 months further ahead in immunity. So when they need to be revaccinated, will this be then 6 months later? And will it be something when the next vaccination will come on an individual basis rather than like the flu vaccine, we set aside 3 or 4 months in the winter? Hitesh, what's your take on that?
So I think it's a similar thing to how we do flu vaccines, I suppose, that we run our flu campaigns from sort of October onwards and we start to vaccinate as soon as possible. So the booster vaccines that are potentially planned, we plan for a period of time set aside. So it may well be later on this year or early next year, depending on how those vaccines are produced or if that's the route we take. The variants that we're seeing around the world, these vaccines can be made to sort of meet those variants. I think this is where we're probably going to head towards. So the booster doses that we get will be slightly different to the vaccines that people have already had at the moment. So the time delay is going to be it won't really make much difference. The idea will be that we actually get boosted with a new variant and we get new antibodies produced from that. So yes, there'll be a campaign. The only thing I would say is that the numbers involved will be huge, and therefore it will have to have a staged process in terms of those at risk will be put in line first, mm-hmm. and the ones that are less at risk left to later on, as we're doing our flu campaigns as well.
Thank you. Steve in Dudley says, are our doctors on the panel looking forward to a day when we can get back to more face-to-face appointments? Or would you consider things like video and phone consultations becoming more of the norm? Steve says he's had a couple of consultations that way, and while initially hesitant, it's actually been really convenient for him. So what, you know, is this going to change the way that our GP surgeries operate? Maybe Dr. Ruth, could you pick up on that one for me, please?
Yeah. Yes, we have enjoyed working in different ways, but also recognise we do need to do face-to-face appointments and probably a lot more face-to-face appointments than we were doing at this time last year. But we are certainly increasing the number we do. The directive from NHS England at the moment is that we do continue with total triage model, which is effectively what we're doing. Everybody is pre-contacted either by phone or an online contact. And then we decide whether a face-to-face appointment is needed. But I think we will continue with perhaps a hybrid model of using phone, video, and face-to-face. The video technology has improved hugely since we started 12 months ago. I've done 3 or 4 successful video consultations today, a lot of work over the phone, but also brought a number of patients in as well. So, and it's quite nice for us to work in different ways. It breaks up the day well, and we can hopefully provide the best best way of treating each person individually. So everything was done on a case-by-case basis, really.
Sure. Yes. I've had an email now from Harold and Lynn Groves in Stourbridge. Hello to Harold and Lynn. Thank you for your email. They say, we're in the older age group and wonder whether the panel feel that even if masks and distancing are dropped, testing might remain prevalent. We don't test for many similar conditions like flu as a rule, and even if tests become something even more convenient than they are now as technology progresses, do we believe that we'll need them more than ever or more often? Who could help me with that one?
I can start.
Thank you, Dr.
Yes, I think we will continue to test, and now especially we have the lateral flow testing for asymptomatic people. Can go and pick up the testing kits and do it at home. Very simple test, and you can get the result in less than an hour. It is important we test, because after the vaccination we might have asymptomatic carriers, people having the virus but they don't have symptoms. So by testing, and we know if it is positive we need to self-isolate for 10 days, we will help to reduce the spread further. So currently we encourage people to test, and asymptomatic testing, they can pick it from the pharmacy from centers in Dudley like Salt Wells, for example, and do them at home. Yes, so testing is here to stay. Yeah.
Lovely, thank you.
Just one quick point to make on testing will be that the other important aspect of testing is around finding variants as well. So not so much on the lateral flows, but testing itself helps us to ensure that new variants are carefully monitored, and that's going to be a big part of how we keep ourselves safe longer term.
Next question from Brenda. She says, a simple question. Some very harsh rhetoric is used around variants. Should we really be scared of them? It feels sometimes that they're used to try and stop complacency, and some experts claim as mutations are a regular thing, we should always be vigilant but not unduly scared. Now, my understanding of that is any virus will mutate, and, you know, the vaccines have been designed with best endeavours to, you know, try and deal with that as best as it can. Who can help Brenda with an answer to her question, please? Dr. Mo, please.
Absolutely, as you said, viruses do mutate. That's in their nature. And, you know, as we've already mentioned, the really, really sad scenes we're seeing in India, we know that when case numbers are very high, you're naturally more likely to see variants. And that's when, you know, variants can occur. Now, the big thing with variants is, are they variants of concern? And that's the investigations that are ongoing at the moment. So I know people will have heard of the Brazilian variant, the South African variant. Obviously, there's cases of the Indian variant in the UK as well. And the Kent variant is the one that our UK variant was the one that really exploded sort of autumn, winter time last year, and is really prevalent across Europe now. So, you know, variants do occur. What we want to know is, are these variants more transmissible? So can they pass between people more easily? Are they less responsive to vaccinations, which would obviously be a concern, or are they less responsive to the treatments we've had? And that's where our awesome scientists and researchers will be looking right now behind the scenes at things like the Indian variants to see if they are of concern. Equally, for that reason, we've got hard work going on from public health colleagues, from local authorities. You know, a lot of your listeners will have heard of surge testing going on in particular areas where these variants are found, for that exact reason, so that we can investigate them more and so we can clamp down on where these variants do occur and stop any spread. So, you know, we do need to be concerned, because there might be a variant that appears that may be less responsive to vaccines and treatments. But as Hitesh said, that's where, you know, we've got a bit of a trump card in that we can tweak our vaccines, and a booster can be made to be more effective against a variant if the current vaccines aren't as effective. So I would say it's not a scare tactic. It is something that concerns us. But at the moment, everything suggests that the vaccines we've got are working, and there is a lot of work going on behind the scenes with testing and so on to make sure that any variants do occur are picked up and kept at bay as much as possible.
Dr. Ruth, if I'm somebody who is vulnerable or housebound or not able to use technology, or I may have reduced learning ability, or I may be hearing or sight impaired, how are people in those groups able to have the vaccine, and what has the CCG done to facilitate that?
There's a lot of work being gone on with our local colleagues, particularly in public health. From the point of view of the technologies, as long as people can use a phone, then we can get appointments booked for people. Obviously, if you can go online and book through the website, that takes the burden off the phones, but we can help people via phone. Mm-hmm. We've actually set up specific sessions for people with learning disabilities or particular vulnerabilities. We've had some deaf sessions, mm-hmm. and we've had some women-only sessions. We're having sessions in different communities where we can concentrate on a particular community like the Roma community, or we've had some sessions in mosques as well. So there's been a lot of work going on where we've collected a lot of data, and in the early days we could see where the take-up was not as good.
Yes.
So we've been able to focus on those areas by working. The CCG has been working very carefully with public health, with Myada and her colleagues, and we've been able to focus in on those areas where people are more vulnerable. The housebound were done pretty early on, actually. We had a roving team, which was primarily district nurses with pharmacy support. So most people who are truly housebound probably have both of their vaccinations by now. And, you know, the carers have all been vaccinated in the earlier cohorts as well.
Super. I'm keen to get as many questions answered as I can. Sue Lees has dropped me an email. She says, I've had the first jab and had the effects for a few days later. Will I get side effects from the second AstraZeneca jab that she's had? I think we've covered this earlier on, but Sue may have only just joined us. But Dr. Myada, could you answer that one? Because we talked about that earlier, didn't we?
Yes. It's anecdotal evidence that people who got, especially with AstraZeneca, who got side effects with the first dose, they are unlikely to get it with the second dose. Having said that, the immune system of people differs from one person to another. So hopefully, Sue, you will not get as severe side effects as the first dose.
Thank you. Sid Hastings in Gornal says, will I need another jab in the autumn? And is this the same as the flu jab? And that was something that we talked about, Dr. Mo, earlier on. For Sid, who may have just joined us, could you reiterate what we said earlier on, please?
Absolutely. I think that from what we're being told by the vaccines minister, there is a likelihood that there will be a booster program, that the details of that aren't clear yet. But what we don't know with the vaccination program at the moment, because it is such early days, is how long the immunity that's clearly built by the vaccines it lasts for. So there is a chance there will be boosters. We will find the details of which cohorts that will apply to in due course. And there's a real opportunity that should we get these variants, that we can tweak the vaccines to make sure whatever booster we get is more effective against these.
Lovely, thank you. Hitesh Patel, when will the 30-plus age group be vaccinated, please?
At the moment, Clive, we're working down the cohorts on phase two of our vaccination programme. So we've just started to invite our 40-year-olds and over. Mm-hmm. So they're booking through the national booking system or into our PCN vaccination sites. The 30-year-olds and over, I'm hoping, I mean, if we can get the 40-year-olds done as soon as possible as we're working through those cohorts, within the next month or so, we'll be moving on to the 30-year-olds and over. Some of those have already been done, especially if they were part of a medical risk group. So a number of those in the risk groups have already been done. But I'd hope in the next sort of 3 to 4 weeks we can start to open up the cohorts. What will probably happen is we'll start to work on sort of the cohorts from 39 to 35 and slowly move up that age group in that way, as we've done for the other cohorts in phase two.
Lovely, thank you. Patrick from Dudley emails. He says, I'm really proud of the vaccine effort, but specifically in Dudley. Walking around, I feel safe, and my experience in the vaccination centre was superb. Are you all pleased with the people's response in this region? Dr. Ruth, probably for you, I think.
We're very pleased. Across the Black Country, we've vaccinated more than 89% of our over 50s. But in Dudley, we're at 91%. So, you know, we're kind of leading the way in the Black Country, and we are very proud of the way this is, the programme has gone out. And, you know, thanks hugely to all the staff involved. And there's been such close working with the voluntary sector between primary care, pharmacy, public health, that, you know, some of our GP leaders have really had to work way above the usual mark. They work hard at the best of times, but have worked extremely hard to get this program up and running. And, you know, it's been successful throughout the country, but I think we're there with some of the better areas. Yet it's, you know, we have got some difficult demographics in our area to deal with, and a lot of vulnerable people. So, yeah, it's been very good work.
And to be fair, where I live, I mean, I don't live in the Black Country, but where I live, again, my health trust has got it down to an absolute fine art. And it's very, very systematic and very, you know, done very fluidly. And I think the government app is a good way of obviously getting information, but also booking appointments too. Now, can we visit others if I am vaccinated and the other person is vaccinated as well? Dr. Mayada.
And the answer is no. We have to follow the government guidance, because it's not just on your vaccination status, it's on how much viruses are circulating in the community, and it's also on the R value. So we are allowed as 6 people from 2 households to meet outside, six people to meet outside, or any number from 2 households to meet outside. And we still recommend you follow the guidance of the social distancing and the hand washing. And also, if you are not able to stay 2 meters apart, you use a mask as well.
Thank you. Martin Smith from Gornal emails in. He says, my daughter works in the NHS and we're so proud of her. We're lucky to have the NHS in this country, and I think it's almost exclusively down to the angels in scrubs and white coats as well, he says, that we're almost free of this virus. So that's just a thank you from Martin, not only to yourselves, but your staff and people that work in your respective areas of the health service. Because I think it's fair to say the whole country, literally the whole NHS, just went boom. And, you know, rose to the challenge admirably.
Yeah, I'd just like, just one quick point on that Ruth has made as well, Andy, that there was not only a health professional has been a big part of that. What I've seen when I've been working out in the PCN sites is there's also been a huge response from the public. They've been coming forward to have vaccination. I think that's played a big part in terms of making this whole thing successful.
Absolutely. It's a two-way thing, isn't it? Just one quick question, because I think we're going to run out of time if I'm not careful. But can I have the vaccine if I've got other allergies? So I may have an allergy to food or other medication. I take it it's safe for me to have that. Who would like
absolutely. That? Yeah, absolutely. It was a bit of a concern in the early days. And the initial allergy was with the Pfizer. I mean, if you remember when Pfizer first came out, there were a couple of people that had quite significant anaphylactic reactions. So we put some extra processes in place about keeping people in the vaccine centres for 15 minutes to be observed. And all the vaccine centres have medical supplies and anaphylactic drugs there if needed. I don't think any of us have needed anything in Dudley, touch wood. But yeah, no, absolutely. You can have either of the vaccines, but depending on what the allergy is, we could potentially move away from Pfizer for that one to the AstraZeneca. So the AstraZeneca is probably the safer one from allergy point of view, and the Pfizer one from the blood clots situation.
Sure. Well, time is rapidly running out, but before we finish, I just want to ask each of you, what would be your final message as we conclude this interview to my listener out there? Hitesh Patel, what message, key message, would you like to get across to people as this vaccination process continues?
Just a couple of things. Firstly, a big thank you to everyone who's been involved, because I think it's been an incredible effort throughout Dudley. Especially within primary care and the voluntary sectors, working with public health, there's been a huge collaborative effort. But my one point I probably would want to make, though, is our second doses are really important. We're moving on to those second doses now. And what I don't want to see is people sort of not coming forward for their second doses, feeling that they've been vaccinated and they're well protected. So that's one message I do want to give out.
Mine's firmly on my calendar.
Perfect.
Dr. Meada.
I just want to say we need to be aware of how lucky we are to have access to the vaccine, the first and second dose, for free, and the way it is organized in the UK. Other areas in the world, they don't have that privilege. So this is why I urge everyone to take this opportunity and take the vaccine, the first and second dose, and to follow the public health guidance in terms of masks, social distancing, hand washing, and fresh air.
Thank you. Dr. Mo, what are your thoughts?
I'm going to go on two very slight tangents. My first would be to just acknowledge that I know you mentioned the NHS. The staff across the NHS in secondary care, primary care have been incredible. But I think it's just important to acknowledge that, you know, as we move away from COVID, there's a real effort going on to catch up with everything that may have been delayed because of the pandemic, mm-hmm. people who may not have accessed health services. So really the pressure on everyone working across the NHS isn't going to let up, alongside the vaccination programme, alongside the chronic diseases and the vulnerable people that have always been there. So we all know somebody who works for the NHS. Just bear in mind how hard they've worked, and they may also need time to rest, recover and recuperate. So just to acknowledge that. And also the other tangent to that is the non-COVID impact of the pandemic. So many have struggled. Mental health is something we're seeing so much at the moment. So, you know, if there are people, family, friends you haven't heard from, drop them a message, check in on them. Equally, if you are struggling and you need support, there's NHS mental health support 24/7. We're available as GPs. You know, there's a lot of mental health support from the Samaritans available. So please, please do get in touch if you're struggling.
Thank you. And finally, Dr. Ruth.
So just remember that the vaccine is there to protect yourself, but also by having the vaccine, you are protecting other people as well. So, you know, just think about protecting other people and how much we're reducing transmission rates by all of us having the vaccine. By this point, anyone over 40 is entitled to have the vaccine. So if you are over 40 and you've not heard anything, then please contact 119 or the NH or the website. To get your vaccine booked.
Absolutely. That's super. Time has actually beaten us, but thank you very much to Dr. Meada Abu Afan and Dr. Ruth Edwards, who's chair of Dudley Clinical Commissioning Group, Dr. Mo Mandirata and Hitesh Patel, pharmacist. Thank you all very much indeed for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.